This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Artists play a key role in the criminal justice system. Police sketch artists interpret what are often vague descriptions from traumatized witnesses or victims to help flesh out an image of a perpetrator. In courtrooms where cameras are banned, artists can serve as the eyes of the public. Here to discuss the technique and the challenges of police and courtroom sketches, our police specialist with the Cincinnati Police Personal Crimes Unit, Jane Knoll, and fine artist and courtroom artist Marlene Steele. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jane, did I get your last name right?
You got it correct. Thank
you. Okay. Very good, because I almost said Noel, and I thought, no, not quite.
It's close to Christmas, so we're okay.
Jane, how long have you been a police sketch artist, and how did you get into that line of work?
I've been a police sketch artist since 2002. And it was just by fluke. My boss came through the office and asked if anyone had experience in the art world. My undergraduate degree happens to be in fine arts and art education. So I raised my hand, and the rest is history, I guess.
You've been doing sketches since?
Since 2002, yes, sir.
How many sketches do you do? Is there like a certain number you do on a daily basis?
Or, no, sir, because okay. My primary job is to investigate sexual assault and crimes against children. So this is just a secondary job, so to speak. So I do about 24 drawings a year for our jurisdiction and then jurisdictions in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana.
Mm-hmm. And Marlene, how long have you been doing courtroom sketching, and how did you happen to get into that?
Well, I happened to get into it because I've always loved drawing the figure, and I've developed an ability to incorporate speed and gesture into my drawing. And in 2004, I got a call from Channel 9. They asked if I was available to do courtroom sketches the next day with Tom McKee, the anchor, and it was the Erpenbeck case, which was a big regional high interest case, high impact fraud case in the federal district here.
And that was the first one you ever did, was that particular case?
That my trial by fire, yes, sir. And it was very interesting working with a great anchor who really knew his stuff. And I attended with the hospitality of Judge Art Spiegel, five sessions and made drawings throughout the five sessions.
Mm-hmm. What do you find to be the most challenging thing about the work that you do, Marlene?
The time frame is very often the biggest challenge, because you never know from when the gavel hits when you are allowed in the courtroom until the session is ended and the bailiff instructs everyone to leave the premises. You have that limited, unpredictable time frame to produce a work of art that tells the story of what just transpired. It's at once a compositional problem. It is at once a caricature studies of the defendant, the judge, of course, and other key players in the process. And you have to organize that very quickly and execute it very quickly.
And Jane, what would you say is the biggest challenge you face in doing your work?
My work is totally opposite of Marlene's, because my work is supposed to be a representation of this bad person who's committed a crime. So the biggest obstacle really is listening skills for me, because I have to listen to that victim or that witness describe or help me draw the picture. So I use photo references. But if I'm not having a good day listening, the drawing will never be right.
A photo reference, what?
So I use a photo reference. I use an FBI catalog, and there's another catalog called the Steinberg's catalog. And I also use photographs of hats or coats or clothing. So I'm drawing the memory of this person who's a victim or witness. So I always use the analogy of almonds. You can tell me that the bad guy had almond-shaped eyes. I can take a jar of almonds and dump them out on the table, and there's 500 almonds, and there's 400 different shapes. They're all almonds, and they're all almond-shaped, but they're all different. So I have to be able to listen to what size and what shape almond this person is telling me about.
And the references help determine what
those
things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I use a piece of paper and a pencil so I can combine images, you know, the top lid from one picture and a bottom lid from another picture, and put those two together.
Let's talk about the recent case, Portia Brooks. You crafted the suspect sketches here, and Portia Brooks was probably one of the cases that you were involved with doing that. And she was the young woman murdered in Norwood.
Yes, sir.
Back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend was critically wounded, and he was actually the prime witness.
He was the only witness.
Can you talk about working with him through that mm-hmm. difficult case to uncover the suspects?
Yes, sir.
In the case?
It was kind of an unusual case because I had to go to the hospital and interview her boyfriend, Aaron, shortly after the shooting. So he had been shot in the head. So he was in his hospital bed. He was on a lot of medication. So the interview for the drawing took quite a long time because he kept kind of falling asleep.
He drifted in and out of consciousness, didn't he?
Yeah. While I was doing the drawing. And so the interview for the drawing took some time. And usually I separate myself from that victim or witness to do the actual drawing. So the interview takes about an hour. With Aaron, it took a little bit longer because he kept falling asleep. And then I come back to that victim or witness after the drawing is finished and have them look at it because I have to make corrections. So when Aaron saw that drawing, he actually hit the drawing out of my hand and said, "That's him." So that to me is a wonderful reaction from that person who helped me do that drawing. And then about a year later, Aaron started having other memories about the drawing, and he had called the Norwood Police Department to ask to meet with me again because he thought he had made a mistake on the drawing, the first drawing that he had done. Well, it turned out that there were two perpetrators. So I met with Aaron again, and we did the second drawing.
How often is it that you have to go back and revise a drawing, even one that may have already been released to the press?
I've never revised a drawing after it's been released. The drawing
during
always—
During the process itself,
During though. The process itself. So the actual interview for the drawing takes about an hour. The drawing itself takes about 3 to 4 hours to complete. And then I always meet with the victim or witness again and show them the drawing afterwards. And we kind of go back to the time and the place where the incident occurred, and I ask them to close their eyes and relive the incident and then show them the drawing. And then I tell people I have 3 pencils and about 15 different erasers because I want to make sure that this drawing, it's not a work of art like Marlene's art. Mine is supposed to look like the bad guy. So if there's corrections to be made, they have to be made.
And going back to the case of Portia Brooks, it highlights another point. It was night. The witness was shot in the head.
Yes, sir.
How accurate are witness descriptions? I mean, how much weight is given to the witness description when you're searching for a suspect?
It depends on the situation. I mean, there's so many variables involved in this drawing stuff because it's all subjective. It's like an interpretation of their memory. So I have to be a good listener. I have to listen to what they're telling me. They saw it a certain way. They remember it a certain way. They communicated it to me. I have to see it in my brain, copy the pictures that they're telling me to, then put it on paper. So there's a lot of interpreting.
Is it like putting the pieces of a puzzle together?
Yes,
finding
it is.
Finding the right facial features and delving through all those memories. And sometimes they're clear,
sometimes they're clear. And I've done some really bad drawings, to tell you the truth. And that's what happens, though. I mean, I can only draw what that victim or witness told me to draw.
Where do you start? What's the most important? Is it the eyes that you start with first?
No, I talk to that victim and I interview them. So I find out from that victim or witness, when they meet a person for the first time, what feature do they look at? If they're an eye person, that's what we start with.
That's what
with.
You start with.
Right. Whatever they typically in their day look at first.
If they're a nose person, they looked at the nose first, that's where you start.
Mm-hmm. Overall head shape. Oh, I look at their head shape. So that's what I start with.
How long does it take to make one of these sketches?
It depends. Some of them are quite detailed. Usually it takes about 3 to 4 hours. And as you practice, the time frame, you know, gets shorter and shorter.
What's the difference or the advantage or disadvantage, perhaps, of doing your sketches by hand versus using a program, say, like Identikit
that gives you facial composites? Identikit. So the old Identikit is so antiquated, but it's really a neat thing because it was transparencies that were overlaid one on top of the other. The problem with a computer-generated program is you can't manipulate it. And I know that they've come up with some really great new programs, but you get a set of eyes, you get a set of eyebrows, you get nostrils that are in a pair, you get a bottom lip and a top lip together. So by using photo references and a pencil, I can do exactly what that victim tells me to do. Because the left nostril might be a little bit bigger than the right nostril, or the right eyebrow might be pointy and the left eyebrow is rounded. So if they can articulate how to make that, I can do it. you can't manipulate the computer programs to reflect what that person saw.
Is it ever because you're dealing with people who've been traumatized, they've been in a very stressful situation. Is it ever difficult for you two? Do you ever pick up on the stress and the trauma that they've gone through as you're doing the drawings?
I'm very empathetic towards them, but I can't let that affect my work. I mean, I'm a policeman first, and we're all people here, but I have a job to do. And I can be empathetic but maintain the distance between that victim or witness. So I have to say no.
How often do leads come from sketches?
A lot. It's amazing to me. And I keep a record of the person who's been arrested, and I keep a book. I have a book with the drawing and the person who's been arrested. And as I said before, every once in a while I'll have a terrible drawing, and it doesn't look a thing like what the bad guy really looks like. But I can only draw what the victim says. And sometimes I surprise myself that I'm like, oh my gosh, it looks just like the bad guy. But it's not me. It's the victim who's telling me what to draw. I can copy anything that they tell me to do. I just have to listen well.
You ever have a case where you're doing a drawing and a fellow officer walks by, sees the drawing, and says,
"Actually, I
did.
Wait
a minute, I know that guy."
And it was early in my career. I had a man from our fraud unit who walked by the office and said, "Oh my gosh, that's Ray Cobia." He had investigated this guy for storefront church fraud. And he walked through the office as I was doing this drawing, and it was a drawing of this man that I had never met, and the victim had given the description of it. And sure enough, we showed this young lady a photo lineup, and she identified him as her assailant, and DNA proved that it was him. So it was just, that's when I started keeping my drawings. I had never kept my drawings before because they're not mine. They belong with the investigator. So I started keeping my drawings, and I started keeping a book of the drawing of the person and the arrested person.
Now, Marlene, you've been in the courtroom for a number of high-profile cases from our region.
Yes, sir.
That one was the Rowan County Clerk, Kim Davis, who stopped issuing marriage licenses out of her Kentucky office in 2015 after the Supreme Court ruling allowing same-sex marriage. Why did they call for a sketch artist in that particular case?
That was a hearing. It wasn't a trial.
Okay.
Excuse me. And it was a particularly volatile, high-impact case. On one side, you learn things about cases when you're sitting in court and you hear all the ramifications that are brought out by the opposing lawyers and by the public defenders or whatever. The judge, Judge Benning, was very interested in searching out exactly what it was that made Kim Davis do this in her office. She was an elected official. Therefore, the county could not fire her. And the way the Commonwealth rules in that county were set up, she was the only person, and her name only, could go on these licenses. So the county had the problem that she was not permitting her name to be used by herself or any of her deputies for the issues, for all the licensing in the county, including, I mean, all other kind of licensing. So it was the county was seeking a compliance mandate from the court. And of course, Kim Davis was being represented as having a moral imperative that did not allow her to license these particular marriages. Now, the interesting fact is she was not marrying anybody. She was signing a permit to be married with due investigation of the marriageability of each party. That has nothing to do with a morality statement in the eyes of the county. So, but the county could also not fire her. She's an elected official.
But this is a volatile case, and that's why the judge, guess, excluded cameras from the courtroom.
It was crazily volatile. I mean, I drove down the AAA highway to Ashland, Kentucky, and parked several blocks away from the courthouse and walked to the courthouse. And all I had to do was follow the noise. There were literally people in the street on both sides of the street in front of the courthouse, you know, screaming down each other's throats, talking about their side of the issue and how they wanted this to be resolved. She was incarcerated and for refusing to comply, after a very long hearing, actually. The hearing began about 10:30 or 11 o'clock, as I remember, and it was well into the middle of the afternoon before the judge called his first recess. It was, you know, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had a while to draw. I had more time than I
had. You had a luxury at that point that you don't normally get.
Did not usually predict that. And so I drew, of course, the courtroom scene. I drew, and I'm working in pastel, by the way, which is a little bit different material.
Do you add the colors in? Do you do the sketch first and then add the colors in later? Is that how you do it? Or
I try to make it a very fluid, like
all at the same time.
Yeah, all at the same time. I draw with pastel, and then I block in the color and work a little bit more on the specific faces of the people that are key characters in the discussion. I did one drawing of the defense table, which had, you know, Kim Davis and her representation in the forefront, and her six deputies, which included her son, in the back of the table, and of course they were the next on the docket as soon as she was incarcerated. The most interesting drawing that I think was that the news media purchased and really liked showing was Kim Davis herself being queried in the witness box by the judge, and the judge was talking to her very directly and asking key questions to help him formulate his ruling. And she's sitting in, she was just at the, I was sitting in the jury box, and she was just in the box at the end of the jury box. And she was very emotional about her testimony. And used a box of Kleenex. It was sitting right on the rail. So I had a very close view of her. And then the judge was right off her right shoulder, and he was in a significantly cogitating type modality. He had his hand, you know, up, and he's listening very hard, and he's thinking. You could tell that in his mind he was processing very closely what she was saying. And I tried to use the hand gestures. He had terrific hand gestures.
What's the most important thing to you as you're doing these sketches? What are you looking for in particular?
Well, one thing that I have learned to do is to think about it in terms of to try to pick out the action that would be very important for the anchor, the news anchor, to write their story to. So there are pivotal moments that occur in a trial where, you know, the technician holds up the murder weapon, or they're interviewing the defendant, and that's a high charge, you know, it's a highly charged interview. The key moments of testimony, and like for instance in the Chris in the Andrew Connelly case in Rising Sun, which was a
very sad case,
very very tragic case of the 17-year-old that killed his brother. You know, none of his family appeared in that courtroom. Maybe the grandmother for one or two of the sessions, but the parents did not. The mother made a deposition by videotape, and I drew her on the video screen, sobbing, talking to the interviewer. And it was interesting to note that at the defense table, Andrew never looked up. He never looked at her. And that was the only testimony that anyone from the family gave. I mean, his stepfather was not interviewed. The mother was, and it was a tragic case. I also was able to do the last portrait of him before he was sentenced to life in prison.
What's the most gratifying thing about the work that you do, Marlene?
Well, I enjoy the challenge of it. I really do. I think you have to pass so much security to get into the courtroom. You have limited materials and opportunity, and to create a sketch that maybe even has multiple aspects of the procedure going on, so that the news media can use the whole picture at one time, or they can use sections of the picture to augment and recut the segment for a later broadcast.
And Jane, what about you? What's the most gratifying thing about what you do?
When I see the arrested picture and it looks like my drawing, it's just so neat to see that the communication went on so well between myself and the witness that we were able to make that likeness of the bad guy. And it gets shown on the news, and people call Crime Stoppers, and we get, you know, a suspect, and then the photo lineup is shown, and we have our bad guy. And to me, that's really neat to be able to assist in so many different investigations.
And I think both of you probably would say, yes, this is a public service that we're doing.
Well, it is.
So is that how you feel, or?
It's another avenue for me to sell my drawing skills. I mean, it helps support.
It's a challenge.
It is a challenge, yes. But I cultivate my drawing skills in order to be able to respond in such a way like this, and so it supports me in my living.
Jane and Marlene, pleasure talking to both of you. Thank you so much
for being here today.
Thank you.
Police specialist with the Cincinnati Police Personal Crimes Unit, Jane Knoll, and fine artist and courtroom artist, Marlene Steele.